Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, step right up. Behind this curtain lies a ghastly concoction of delight, horror, fantasy, and terror. Your every wish is our command. Your every whimsical desire brought to life. But I'm warning you, there's always a price. Welcome to the greatest honor!
And welcome back to the greatest show on earth that is Talking Terror. As always, I'm your old pal, the King of Horror, Andy G. Welcome you to this episode of the show. We're going to be talking about the Mad Monkeys film pick of the week, Piranha 3DD, directed by John Gulager from 2012. We are not going to be joined by the Ghoul Geek Keith tonight because he had a very long day. We're giving him a little bit of a break. We are going to be joined by the Dean, but he dropped off. So if you're listening live, you're not hearing this. You'll just have to listen to the recorded episode. So it's just me and the Mad Monkey as of right now until Dean calls back in. But it will be recorded, so we'll just have to see how this goes. So, Monkey, how you doing out there?
Oh, yes! King, hey there, Fright fans, Hall Hounds, and Ghoul Geeks. It is once again Talking Terror time, baby. Your favorite time of the week when we, your demonic DJs of dread, are coming in your ears live with the latest horror news and always unique movie reviews. But we all know how much you love us, baby. We all know. But him, we all know that you like and subscribe to Talking Terror on both Facebook and Instagram. But did you know you can also message Talking Terror Instagram page to find out that you can be a contributing member of the Talking Terror family, so reach out today and show us the love, baby. Now on with the podcast. What is up, my friend family? What's up, King? It's just me and you right now, is it?
No. No.
All right, yeah, Dean, we got out.
No,
we got
Dean,
the pain.
You didn't call in as host, buddy. You have to call back in as host, not as a guest.
Okay, let me call back in. That's fine. Okay.
We'll keep talking. We'll keep talking. We'll keep dancing. Wow, can't wait to see how this turns out. Oh boy. It's complicated, folks. You know, when we lose the ghoul, we lose everything. So, you know, he is the host general when it comes to the show. Knows what to do, knows how to do it. You know, but unfortunately, the Dean having to do it, he's in a rough spot, patchy with the phone. Oh, so it's going to be one of those recorded episodes where we don't know if anybody's listening to this or hearing it, but hopefully somebody will tell us, like our listeners out there, like TA, will be like, I didn't hear anything for like an hour. And then all of a sudden you guys came back on. That's great. Loyalty listener right there. So while we figure this out with the Dean and getting back in as host, is there anything you wanted to talk about, Monkey? Anything you've been watching, anything you've been reading, anything you kind of want to tell the audience about?
Oh, wow. Put me on the spot. Yeah. Actually, I just recently finished reading this really, really awesome book called Future Noir, The History of Blade Runner. It was this very, very deep dive into the behind the scenes of Blade Runner. I know you have not seen it, King, but it is out there. It is a filmmaking masterpiece, and it's just all the things that they go into, the super, super deep dives. Like, I thought I was a fan of this film until I read this book, and I was like, I don't know shit, man. There is so much that it covers. So much so that, like, found out, like, you know, silly shit, like, that there's actually a model of the Millennium Falcon hidden in the movie, unintentionally, but
well,
it's there, you know. And so other stuff like that. And then after I finished that, I went ahead and rewatched Blade Runner, the final cut, which is supposed to be the cut that Ridley Scott swears by. You know, he says this is his 100% approved cut. And after reading this entire book and then going into this, like, I went in with brand new eyes, man. Like, the entire movie just reopened up for me. Like, I was watching it for the very first time. And it's just, you know, yeah. So if you are a fan of Blade Runner, definitely, definitely check out this book. And then go back and watch the final cut. And it will definitely mess with your mind of just how deep of a dive this movie can be. Yeah, so, yeah, it was really, really awesome to sit there and do that.
Well, that's awesome. The Dean did come back as host, and then he dropped again because he's obviously in a spotty area. So I just let him know to call back in. We are still on air. We're still live. So we're still rolling. So we're still going to keep on going with this fun. Oh, there he is. Okay, Dean, are you back with us?
I'm back if you can hear me.
Yes.
Yep.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Woo-hoo! Okay. So, yeah, it might be one of those things, Dean. You might just have to keep calling in if you get dropped. But we can hear you loud and clear, baby. So very good.
All right.
That.
Well, good that you can hear me loud and clear. And for our very loyal audience,
there he goes.
Take a brief moment to apologize for these technical
They happen.
Exactly.
And they happen. You know? Well said. Couldn't have said it any better myself, sir. So, yeah. So, it'll happen. We're still live. We're still rolling. So if you get kicked off again, you can just call back in and we're going to keep it going. It only affects live listeners. And as you know, we don't have any live listeners. Nobody listens to us live.
Well, we got my mama.
Come on, we don't listen live. Mama. She even told me that. She's like, bitch, I don't listen live. She's like, I listen to that on Saturdays. Saturdays, mama time. And I was like, oh, that's right. Sorry about that. She's like, you won't forgive it.
When Mama Monkey has the nails along getting this shit done, she's listening to us bullshit.
Listen to my baby monkey talking about these horror movies. I don't know why she's Dusty Rose all of a sudden, but still. Oh, yeah, listen to my baby talk about some horror movies on the Talking Terror podcast. Let me get my hair all done, going to bingo tonight. Oh, my baby's talking about some gore.
My baby loves that bloody mess. Yes, he does.
My baby, he loves his movies, bloody baby. You know how he does. Love this movie. Mrs. Monkey has fucking Dusty Rhodes sitting in the salon. Why don't you get the toes, baby, while I listen to my baby boy talk about Piranha 3WB? It's got the boobies, it's got the fish, it's got everything, baby. Oh, yeah. Come over here, daddy, listen to my son talk about this girl's tits getting ripped off. It's quality entertainment. So with the Dean still being here, let's talk about some horror news. And if you drop again, we have some stuff we could talk about in the interim. So what are we talking about horror news-wise tonight, Dean?
Oh, what are we talking about horror news tonight, King? Well, the first thing, as I am currently, as I've said, entrenched in the realm of The Walking Dead City, and we know that coming this fall, probably.
I was only going to say this week on this week on The Walking Dead.
well, Monkey, I'm here to report the news as I see it out there in the world, and that's what I'm here to do right now. So I'm going to carry on with my story. We know that in the fall, most likely in October, we will see The Walking Dead: Daryl Dixon taking place in France or Europe or something. And then it was announced that the Rick and Michonne spinoff limited series, which apparently is only going to be 6 episodes long, it's going to be like a closed loop. Like, I believe that will be I'm not certain, but I believe that those 6 episodes will be it for their story. It seems that the Maggie Negan / Daryl Dixon, maybe depending on factors, has legs beyond these current seasons that are one airing and about to air in the fall. But it's been said that it is a limited series, that 6 episodes for Rick and Michonne. And it has had a rumored title, but it's been announced that the official title, very simply, is called The Walking Dead, Rick and Michonne. And that it will be airing sometime in 2024. My prediction would be October, but as of now, it just says sometime in 2024.
Wasn't there supposed to be like Rick Grimes movies too? Like, didn't at one point there was like 2 Rick Grimes movies?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No. Your information is close. But what happened was after Andrew Lincoln and his character of Rick Grimes, of course, left the show in season 9 under mysterious circumstances in the helicopter and everything. Yes, it was reported that Andrew Lincoln, as Rick Grimes, was going to star in not one, not two, but three feature-length films. And I think what happened there is that COVID kind of killed all of that. And I think the story that is going to be told in these episodes is basically what the story would have been in those three movies. Now, figure an hour for each episode. We're talking 2, 4, 6 hours, like a suitable running time for three movies. You know, that it appears to be what will take place. But yeah, those movies, those the big screen movies are not happening. That was scrapped quite some time back.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for clearing that up, because I remember they were talking about movies. But, you know, 6 episodes, you could just tie it up. Sounds like that's what you're trying to do. Just end that chapter of Rick and Michonne completely and just move on. So, excited.
Yes.
All right, so what's next? What are we talking about?
Next, starting in London on November 17th, is the stage show, Stranger Things, The First Shadow. And that's going to run from November 17th through August of 2024. And apparently what's being teased for this stage performance is that this stage show and the plot of the stage show could potentially hold the key to answers about the future of Stranger Things as a franchise. It's long under lock and key that the upcoming 5th season will be the final season of the main show, but there has also been different spin-off rumors and such, you know, over the years, with nothing, of course, being announced. But apparently this Stranger Things First Shadow stage show might shed light on some of that.
And is this officially tied to Needful Things, or is this someone doing an independent project?
I don't know anything
Stranger
about Needful Things.
Stranger.
I'm talking about Stranger Things.
Sorry.
This is the Duffer Brothers. The Duffer Brothers are involved in it. It's like official. It's official.
It's a real deal. Yeah, it's legit. So, only in London, though. Nothing in the U.S. So, if you're interested, you've got to fly over to the U.K. and check it out and report back. So,
I will not
but at this
be
point,
going to London.
No, either will I, you know, about the same time, you know. At this point, the kids are going to be in their 40s, and it's going to be taking place in, like, Y2K, you know, season 5. It's the millennium. Well, they're all, like, 25 years old now. They're not teenagers, but who knows when season 5
no,
is going
and,
to come.
And as I, you know, as we had even talked about, by the end of season 4, they were doing so much camera trickery to try and, like, hide how tall some of the kids have gotten and make them still appear younger, like the amount of growth that has happened in all of those characters. You know, you might not even realize it, but if you go back and look at a clip from season 1 and then look at a clip from, like, the end of season 4, like, the transformation is huge. So, you know, I know that there's apparently going to be a time jump in between season 4 and season 5. Because that would be the only way to feasibly do it, given, you know, how long this show has been out there in existence and the story that they're trying to tell, which I do think also has led to wrapping this up with the final 5th season. But, you know, obviously in this portion of our program, if any word were to come down the line about potential spinoffs, you know, I would be here to share that information with all of you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And plus, like you said, like Lucas – from the previous season to the current one that just aired, he was like 7 feet tall playing basketball. Like, so he has a gigantic fucking growth spurt. So as he's just towering over everybody, he's like, "What's up, guys?" Damn. So you kind of try to do something with that. But, you know, it's just cool. Just, you know, bring back Eddie Munson. That's all I want for season 5. Find a way, guys. Best part of that season. But yeah, I can't wait to hear more news as it comes across the Dean's desk. But what's next, Dean? What are we talking
yeah.
about?
I have two items to share in the realm of the Alien universe, the first of which is that the Alien film from Fede Alvarez has wrapped. Production on the upcoming film from Momentum and 20th Century Studios has wrapped. As we know, this was supposed to be a Hulu exclusive, but similar to what happened with the recent Evil Dead film, they're now giving this Alien film a theatrical release, and you'll be able to sit down in your local theater and check it out on August 16th of 2024, so a little over a year away. But production has completed. Production is over. So now if this is something that you've been waiting for, you just have to wait longer.
A little while longer. You know, it's worth the wait. But even like Ghostbusters, that movie wrapped this week as well, according to Ernie Hudson, but he said there might be a delay in that release as well. So it was supposed to be slated for December, but there might be a delay. So it might be 2024 before we can get to see the new Ghostbusters. But
I didn't hear anything. Yeah, I'm not saying that this Alien film is delayed. That's just what the release date has been. You know, looks like they're banking on some late summer fireworks in the world of the movie theater, and we'll see what happens. I didn't hear about a potential Ghostbusters delay. I have not heard anything about that.
I just heard about it earlier because I saw there was an interview with Ernie Hudson where he was talking about how they wrapped filming and it's all done in the can, but there could be a possible delay. But we talked about in the show previously, like they were aiming for a December 2023 release, but they haven't even started filming yet. And we talk about editing, talking about promotional tools. It's like that's a quick time to film it and then get it out in the theaters in December. So I wouldn't be surprised if it got delayed until 2024 because it's a short period of time, you know? And plus, there might need to be reshoots, you know, so you never know. But either way, it's
all the stuff you got to do in post, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everything you got to do in post.
I mean, we're halfway.
And then we got to get the cereal boxes ready. We got to get the action figures ready. You know, there's a lot of shit you got to get in line before you can get this movie out, man.
Well, exactly. We're in July. Halfway to December. So, I mean, we should be seeing teasers by, like, August if it's going to be released in December. And I don't even think they're probably going to do that. So we'll see. I mean, I'm just excited to get another Ghostbusters movie. But, you know, if I could find any more news about that, I'll put up on the Talking Terror Facebook page. But anyway, Dean, what else are we talking about?
The second item in the Alien universe is that concurrently the Wally series for FX on Hulu is also still a go, and some information about this series has come out. One that different from other films in the long-running Alien saga, this series is going to be set on Earth. It is going to be set decades before. It's going to be set a couple of decades before the first film, taking place near the end of the century. So that means probably like sometime in the 2090s, based on the timeline.
Yeah.
It puts it somewhere in between Prometheus and Covenant. There will be no Ripley character, of course, because she would have only been a little kid in that time frame. And that the Weyland Yutani Corporation will play a significant role in this series as well. So, you know, the Noah Hawley Alien series also is happening.
No, I completely forgot about that one, to be honest. Yeah, I completely forgot about that one. I forgot that there was a series coming out about aliens. So, that's how much information has been coming out about that project. But either way, I mean, hopefully it's good. I mean, yeah, I forgot. I spaced on that until you brought it up. I was like, oh, that's right. Noah Hawley's been doing it.
He forgot.
Well, I mean, if you're not getting information, how are you going to know? Somebody's got to feed us that good, sweet news, and you always do. So that's why we appreciate you doing this segment of the show. You let us know. Got to keep us informed. All right. So what's next thing? What are we talking about?
Robert Eggers has said that his remake of 1922's Nosferatu, he said that he was glad to make it, glad he wasn't able to make it earlier, because even after The Lighthouse and then the, is it The Northman or The Mothman? I can't read my writing as usual.
I think it was The Northman.
He said creating the Nosferatu film has pushed him beyond, pushed him, and I quote, beyond his capabilities, which is what he was going for. So it sounds like another grueling shoot in the Robert Eggers universe. Filming wrapped on his Nosferatu film in mid-May, but there is still no word on a release date at this time.
Yeah, that's what I'm really looking forward to, because Robert Eggers, he knows how to do timepieces. He does really well with time period movies. So when I found out he was doing Nosferatu, I was like, let's fucking do it, man, because he's the right choice. He's the guy that you want if you're going to do a period piece. So I've been excited about this since I heard about it, because to me, he could do no wrong. I've loved every one of his movies that's come out so far. The Northman was great. The Lighthouse is great. The Witch is fantastic, so. I can't wait to see what he does with Nosferatu. Although, can you beat Shadow of the Vampire? It's probably good. Because that was pretty fucking awesome.
Shadow of the Vampire was so fucking awesome.
It's really fucking good. Even the Klaus Kinski Nosferatu is really good. If you haven't seen that one yet, that was pretty decent. But yeah, Shadow of the Vampire, it's so good. So, Dean, I don't know if you ever saw that one, but definitely put it on your list.
Which one?
Shadow of the Vampire.
Shadow of the Vampire.
All about the making of Nosferatu. Yeah. Willem Dafoe, John Malkovich. It's so good.
Yeah, I have not
What's really cool is to sit there and watch that movie and then immediately follow it with watching the original Nosferatu film. And then it really messes with you, just because everything that's happening in Shadow of the Vampire, you're seeing it completely differently when you're just watch the original Nosferatu film.
Yeah, because it leads you to a lot of questions about Max Schreck, who played Count Warlock, Nosferatu.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen it, Dean, put it on your list. I think you'll like it. It's just all about the making of Nosferatu and a lot of questions about the actor playing Nosferatu, Count Warlock.
All right, then.
All right, moving on. What are we talking about?
Wilson wants to direct an adaptation of a supernatural comic called Hawaiian Dick. He says that he's been out doing press, of course, for the upcoming Insidious Red Door film. And he said that quite some time ago, maybe around 2015, he was attached to act in a film adaptation of this supernatural comic, but ultimately never came to life. And there apparently was just something about the story that stuck with him. And now he wants to direct his own version. So that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen. I know that amongst our group of Talking Terror representatives that there are some, comic book fans. So I didn't know if Hawaiian Dick was a comic that any of our comic people were familiar with. So that's why I wanted to share this story about Hawaiian Dick.
Got me there. It sounds like an article coming in a can.
The title alone, I want to see that movie get made. I don't know what the comic book's about. I just want to be able to say I saw Hawaiian Dick. And it's a supernatural story. But where do you guys fall on Patrick Wilson? I think he's a good actor. I don't know. I know a lot of people are kind of mixed about Patrick Wilson, but I think he's pretty solid in all the movies he does, even the Conjuring movies, where it's just like, you're playing such a douchebag, but kind of like him. Even watching him is pretty good. But yeah, I've always had a thing for Patrick Wilson. I always thought he was kind of under the radar type of actor. Either love him or you hate him.
Yeah, sorry. I've only seen him in the couple of Conjuring movies I've seen. I don't think I've actually seen him in anything else, brother.
Yeah, you have, because we covered Hard Candy on the show. He was in Hard Candy. With then Ellen Page, now Elliot Page.
Yay! I had another movie I didn't like. You're not helping me here, King.
And you never saw Watchmen? You never saw the movie adaptation of Watchmen?
No, because I did not like the comic book. I was not a fan of the comic book.
Oh, okay.
So,
see, I thought you did.
Nah.
Yeah.
It's like I tried to jump in a couple times here and there when it came on, and like I caught like, you know, half an hour here and there, and I was just like, nah, it's not doing anything for me. It's just.
Want to jump in Hard Candy is not the only film that we have covered. We also did cover right on this program Bone Tomahawk.
We did, yes. He was in that movie too. Yeah, you're right, Bone Tomahawk. He's in that movie. So Patrick Wilson's been on the show.
Okay.
Several
times.
That was your
pick. Yes, it was.
Oh, I like that. I like Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. It really is. But again, he's a guy that's just under the radar. Like, you see these movies and you're like, I know that guy and I like him, but what the fuck is his name? And you're like, oh, Patrick Wilson, that's right. He's just, you know, one of those guys. He's good when he shows up. Even in those fucking bad Conjuring movies, I'm like, you know what? He just draws you in because he's so fucking charismatic and shit like that. Unlike Ed Warren in real life, who was just an asshole. That's why you need a fucking Patrick Wilson to bring this character to
That's
life.
That's why he's
playing
called acting.
Elvis songs. Yeah. If only the real life Ed knew how to act. Might have come off as a better character. But he did not. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Insidious Red Door. I'm a fan of those movies. So, looking forward to seeing what he brings to the director's table. And seeing how they do this entry. But, all right, Dean, moving on. What else are we talking about?
In the realm of the Blumhouse universe, which is always going on in that neck of the horror woods, it seems that Jason Blum has said that The Exorcist, if there was any question about this, but he wanted to clarify that it is sticking with its October 13th release date. He says that it is good and really scary. He also said, given the Insidious, I never heard of this, what I'm about to say next, I never even heard of this, so I guess it was interest to me, but given that the Insidious cinematic universe is about to grace the screens once again for what is maybe believed to be the final time, apparently there was some work on an Insidious/Sinister crossover. Jason Blum has said that the Insidious/Sinister crossover is not going to happen. He said that there was a lot of things that they were working on as far as developing it for a while. He said that even with their writing team and ideas all over the place, that there just did not seem any truly suitable idea to turn this into a film, that nothing that felt worth it. He said that there was no interest in an Insidious Sinister crossover just to make a crossover film. That if they were going to do it, they wanted to feel like they had a story worth telling, and apparently they just were not able to come up with any ideas that made sense or felt that worked. So a possible Insidious, Sinister crossover at this time appears to be off the table.
Damn. Sounds like Blumhouse needs to give you a call, King. You probably could be able to whip
make
story
that movie.
In
I
no
could
time.
Make that movie fucking right now. Like, I could do that. There is so much potential for a crossover. Like, you have The Further in Insidious and with Sinister. You have Bagul's universe where he takes children. Like, there's a lot of potential there. I'm surprised. that they're not really digging their heels in and trying to do this, because you can make it happen. Both those series have similar vibes, you know, supernatural vibes. So it's like you can make it happen. Like they're just kind of concurrent with each other. So I'm kind of surprised that they don't want to take the chance. Like, you know, Blumhouse, call me. I'll write you a treatment real quick, and you're going to like it. Because I like both of those series, Insidious and Sinister, because there is potential to tap in with the demons in the Further and also the ghoul from Sinister. Wow.
The Further.
That sucks.
The Further.
It's time to return to the Further.
Yeah.
I will say this. I have only seen.
Good. Yeah.
Hold on. I just want to say, maybe I've said this before on the show, maybe not. But the first Insidious is the only Insidious film in this series that I have seen, and I truly was enjoying it up until the part where with Lin Shaye, like going to the Further became like a part of it, then it kind of lost me.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say the early sequences when like the spooky shit starts to take place, the sequence when the wife is home in the house and like that little kid like hops out of the fucking like the cabinet, that was some good shit, if I remember correctly.
You're right. That was in that first Insidious movie. And even that reveal, Patrick Wilson staring at the camera and the fucking demons right behind him. That fucking jump scare. I was like, that shit is good.
Yes.
You know? And
yeah, that was
It's really good. And also Tiny Tim's, you know, tripsing through the tulips and shit like that as a song for the Further. It's such a weird fucking song. But, yeah, no, it's good. I mean, the sequels, obviously, they trail off at a certain point. But that first one is a strong entry. So, I mean, you should revisit it because it's really good. And, you know, with Sinister, the first one is so fucking good. The second one's kind of okay, but yeah, the first one, just stick with that one. You can't go wrong. Is that fucking movie? They do so much fucked up shit. It's like you can't believe you're watching it in a mainstream theater. There's a lot of kids killing people in that movie. I'm always appreciative of that. Killer kids always in this
movie. Yeah, you know, it was I'm pretty sure it was my pick. And I can't remember the title, but there was one that we watched where there was like killer kids, and like wasn't the final scene at like the end of like a long, long driveway. There was like a bus and people were like running for it, and you saw like a bunch of kids like emerge that were like running out down the driveway chasing after the people trying to get to the bus to get away to safety. Does that ring any bells? I was just thinking about this the other day, actually, trying to remember what movie it was.
Yeah, we
definitely watched it. We definitely watched it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely. We've watched a couple Killer Kid movies on the show.
Yeah.
Because I always support that. But yeah, I'll have to think about that because I kind of pinpoint it in my head. But I'll look through the episode list. I'll get back to you on that. But all right, what else are we talking about, Dean?
Shuffle my papers here, as per the usual. Current show that we have talked about here on the program that. We know that I have been watching, and we know that the King has been watching, and I believe he is ahead of me. And I believe that the ghoul maybe even dipped his toes into the world. The MGM Plus series From just aired the final episode of its second season this past weekend. And it has been announced that it has been the second most watched show for MGM Plus, used to be Epix.
Nice.
Second only to a series of theirs called The Godfather of Harlem. And with that news, it has been announced that From season 3 is officially a go.
Oh, that's fucking awesome, man. I'm so excited to hear that news. Because I'm only 3 episodes into season 2, and I'm still loving it.
Oh, so you're just a little bit ahead of me. So I'm currently in the middle of the first episode of season 2. I had put on the first episode of the second season the other evening, but it was late, and I ended up falling asleep. So I have to go back and revisit it. So I'm just a little bit behind you. But like I definitely, this is one I will be continuing with. I'm definitely all in on this one.
Yeah, it still has me interested. Still has me engaged. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how the rest of the season plays out. But to get a season three and get that Stephen King mark of approval, too, that was pretty huge. So looking forward to seeing what the rest of the season has. But, all right, what else are we talking about, Dean?
What, did they pay him $5 to reimburse it?
$1.
I'd buy that for $1. I don't remember what that's from, but I know it was said a lot. But anyway,
RoboCop.
You can take that
RoboCop.
To the bank. That's right. And you can take that.
Buy that for $1.
take that to the bank. That's Steven Seagal, Hard to Kill.
Yeah,
but anyway,
that's good. Yeah.
there had been, at least in the realms of what are news and what's going on, there seemed to be so much buzz surrounding the African-American casted horror film from Tim Story called The Blackening.
Loved it.
And it was released into the theaters on Juneteenth weekend. I have personally not seen it, but I am here to say that what they're saying so far is that it pulled in an estimated $7 million theatrically. But what I'm really here to say is that if you've been looking forward to seeing The Blackening, you will have an opportunity to do it from the comfort of your own home this Friday, July 7th, as The Blackening will head to video on-demand outlets to kick off this coming July weekend. So, again, this was a film that had premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival. It's about a group of black friends who get together for Juneteenth weekend getaway, where they're, you know, in a cabin and there's a killer and they have to play by the rules. And, you know, the friends soon realize that this, and I quote, ain't no motherfucking game. Directed by Tim Story, who directed Ride Along, Think Like a Man, and Barbershop, which in my opinion, Barbershop, the first one, is just an absolutely brilliant film.
Perfect film.
But anyway, The Blackening will hit your home video demand outlets Friday this week, July 7th.
I wish I had known
that.
That
is cool, man.
Yes. There was only one showing this week, and I was off on Monday, and it was at 9 o'clock at night at Regal. They only had one showing of The Blackening, and I was like, I have to go see it. So I did. And I fucking loved it. And then all of a sudden, now you're telling me I could have watched it at home on Friday. I'm like, well, that's all right. At least I paid the ticket price.
Yes.
You know? And so
well,
like,
your
it
ticket
is so
price
fucking
is probably
so good.
I'm gonna guess that your ticket price is probably like $7 or $8 less than what its initial on-demand cost will be to watch. That'll be my guess.
I'm sure. It's probably gonna be like $20. Yeah, I paid $12.50 to go see it, so I'm sure it's gonna be like $20 to rent at home. $19.99, I would imagine. But it's so fucking worth it. It's so funny. It definitely is going to be on my list this year, I think, in the top 10, because I just can't wait to see it again. Can't wait for it to come on home video so I can buy it. But definitely worth checking out. Tim Story did a great job from start to finish. All the tropes are there. I love, you know, black horror cinema. When they go in every direction that you want them to go to, and they hit every fucking note. It's just so good. But so, yeah, check it out this Friday, guys. Definitely try to watch it if you can from at home, you know. But, all right, what else are we talking about, Dean?
There's been, you know, over the years going back to the Ghouls countdown clock, so much talk about the Friday the 13th video game.
I forgot about the countdown clock.
yeah, the countdown. We talked about how recently, you know, probably due to all of the things, all of the moving pieces surrounding the rights ownership lawsuit, that Gun Interactive has announced that later this year they're going to be pulling the game for sale. You know, players that own the game will still be able to play it. Tomorrow, July 6th, they're going to be putting out an update that is going to pretty much unlock almost everything for current players of the game, including 30 of the most popular legendary perks will be made available to all players, All players will be leveled up to level 150. All unlockable kill animations will be unlocked, save for the DLC kills. All challenge skulls will be unlocked. XP and CP earning will be eliminated, and no matchmaking functionality will be lost. They have also put a significant reduction in price, which will remain until the game is pulled from digital and physical stores. Once the game has been pulled, players will still be able to enjoy all of the game's online functionality, they say, through at least December 31st, 2024. So the game can be bought via Steam, PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo Switch. Like, you're still going to be able to play this game for a very long time with all kinds of extras available through downloadable content. But, you know, they make no guarantees beyond that. And also, as I said, you know, at some point later this year, you will no longer be able to purchase the game in any format. So it says that the digital and physical sales, it's actually New Year's this year, after December 31st, 2023, the license will expire. So if you own the game, like I said, you'll still be able to play it for at least another year. You know, so you can also download the base game for just $5 now. And like I said, the update coming tomorrow provides a shit ton of content that would have been available for a cost previously, I suppose.
Well, King, that means when you come over for Thanksgiving, you might be able to sit there and play Friday the 13th since I already have the game. All I got to do is do this update.
There you go. We could be the ones that play it. That'll be nice. I mean, it's sad that it's ending, you know, but at least it had kind of a life for a while. Like, people were really excited about it and playing it and excited for the downloadable content, and it was always kind of hyped up, like, we finally got a Friday the 13th game, you know, but it's coming to an end because of all that licensing shit. But, you know, August 18th, we got Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the game coming out, so people can look forward to that. So it's like we're moving from Jason to Leatherface, so... I'm sure Freddy's not far behind.
But unlike Friday the 13th, you did say Texas Chainsaw Massacre is supposed to have a storyline mode, right? Or story mode?
Nope. No. Only
multiplayer. Oh, man.
Yeah, that was only for Evil Dead. Evil Dead, the game,
they made purposely a single player,
you know, because people wanted it. So they're like, all right, fine, we'll go back in and make a single player game. But for some reason, Texas Chainsaw, they're like, nope. Sorry, we're only going to be doing the multiplayer. So that's the only campaign you're going to be able to watch, you know, or play, rather. But it sucks. I was like, I'll see you on YouTube, Texas Chainsaw Massacre of the Game.
And that's the bitch about those kind of games, though, is they only last as long as the people are there to play it. You know, that's why I don't like these community online games, is because if the crowd is gone... You know, then you can no longer play it. That's why I appreciated the one-player campaign that at least Evil Dead did.
Well, because they listen to the audience. The audience is like, we want a single-player campaign. Like, most of us don't like to play multiplayer. So they're like, all right, let's go back and we'll retool it so you can play it as single-player. I've seen some YouTube videos of that, and it's kind of fun. Like, you know, to see a single-player campaign going through all the adventures of Evil Dead. But... Yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they were dead fast in saying, you know, it's going to be co-op only. So there's not going to be a story. There's not going to be any of that. So I was like, it's kind of a bummer. You know, but like I said, I'm not a gamer anymore, so I'll just watch it on YouTube. When it comes out, people are like, I'm playing Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Great. I can watch that. So. But anyway, Dean, what else are we talking about today?
Let's see. Quentin Tarantino, who has told us already that his 10th and final film, The Movie Critic, is it. Apparently, you know, he's teased over the years the potential for a third Kill Bill fan, which after his previous film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, when there was one film left, there was a lot of speculation if the third Kill Bill was going to be it. But he was giving an interview somewhere where he did say that a third Kill Bill film will not be happening officially. So whether that means because his 10th movie and final film is The Film Critic, or leaving the door open to return to film in the future, there will be no Kill Bill 3, at least in movie format.
I'm okay with that. I feel like this kind of movie wrapped up.
Yeah. The story told the story. It wrapped up. Let it be.
Yeah. I'm kind of fine with that. I know.
There was always a lot of speculation that a potential third Kill Bill film would have the daughter of Vernita Green trying to track down the bride to seek revenge.
Yeah, I mean, which would be nice, but at the same time, like, everything got cleared up with both those volumes. I don't really think I'd want to see another one. You know, it's you know, fine. One of those things where I'm more so looking forward to The Movie Critic, you know, and talking about the porno rag guy that he grew up watching, you know, and reading about. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting one. But, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where it's a nice idea, but they could do, like, a cartoon. They could do an anime. They could do something if they wanted to do, like, a Kill Bill 3, you know, and make it just as fun. But, you know, it's kind of sad to know that Tarantino is going to be stopping after this Movie Critic movie. One of those guys I hope will never stop. You know, but I guess you have to reach a certain point where you're out. You're like, I've made enough films. I can just relax now and enjoy my career as a writer, as a podcaster, you know.
Yeah, but also, you know, just being able to get back to his first love, which was just music and movies in general, and just go back to simply just enjoying those.
Yeah, like I said, he's delivered enough. You know, he's given us a scale of all of these movies. You know, and I can't think of a bad Tarantino movie. You know, I haven't been disappointed. All of his movies. I mean, it's hard to say because there's so many good ones, but like Jackie Brown's one of my favorites. And everybody's like, well, that's not a great one. You know, I'd rather go Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, fuck it, man. Jackie Brown's like one of those ones, man. Oh, yeah, man. It's like, it took a while for it to grow on me, I'll be honest. But it's like, you know, like after the third viewing, I was like, yeah, you know. I fucking love that movie.
What are you going to say, Dean?
You know, that's the same for people of our generation. That's the same exact thing. After Reservoir Dogs, and then, of course, definitely after Pulp Fiction, upon its release, you know, Jackie Brown wasn't received in the same fashion that the previous two films that he had come out, that being his third film. It was a different kind of movie and much different than what people were expecting. But that's one that, as time has gone on, has, you know, the level of appreciation for it tremendously grown. And it's if you were to go back and watch it now, which I watched it probably sometime in the last 8 to 10 months, you know, for the first time in probably 2 or 3 years, it's an excellent fucking film. It just, you know, Pulp Fiction... When Pulp Fiction came out, and to a lesser degree Reservoir Dogs, but when Pulp Fiction came out, that was such a mind-boggling, like, mind-fuck of a movie that time period that set the film industry on a course of there being 50 fucking copycats and everything, just like whenever something successful like that comes along. And, you know,
The Matrix.
You know, the new
that
the
was
new
around
It
the same
Boy
time.
And the Yeah. Quentin Tarantino is the new it guy in Hollywood and the new genius filmmaker and this and that. And then, like, Jackie Brown is just a different kind of movie, and it just wasn't received the same by the whole, like, fan populace, you know? I, too, also, like, enjoyed Jackie Brown when it came out, but my appreciation and love for it, it took multiple viewings over the next several years to truly get it and appreciate it and love it, for sure.
Well, that's the same way I feel about Death Proof. Like, when I first saw Grindhouse in theaters and I saw the Death Proof segment, I'm like, I don't really kind of care about this. I know it's Tarantino. It's got all the Tarantino hallmarks. It's not bad. It's just, it's not great. It took me multiple viewings where I'm like, you know what? This is actually really fucking good. Like, Death Proof is actually really a lot of fun. You know, but it took me a couple viewings to kind of appreciate what he was doing. Just because I was like, you have such a great character in Stuntman Mike, and the way that it ended, I'm like, that's not cool. But then I watched it again. I'm like, you know what? It is cool. Like, because that's the type of character you want to see go out that way, being taken out by a bunch of, you know, hot women, stunt women, you know, and actresses and shit like that. Like, you know, he thinks he's got the balls, but he doesn't, you know, and they take him out. And yeah, it took a little bit for me to kind of get into that movie. But of course, Tarantino with his fucking soundtracks and shit like that. You know, listening to those 70s tunes. You know, K. Billy, Sounds of the 70s, and Reservoir Dogs, and then Pulp Fiction. Like, he always knows how to make a good soundtrack.
comedian Stephen Wright is the DJ.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Stephen Wright is the DJ. The Bohemoth. He just mispronounces that name. Like, you never forget it. But, yeah, it's just, yeah, I've always, like, Pulp Fiction's great, but I thought that Reservoir Dogs is better. Like, I've always been that guy. I'm like, you know what? Everybody loves Pulp Fiction. I'm kind of with Reservoir Dogs. Like, I like Pulp Fiction a lot, but it's just, it's not Reservoir Dogs. Like, that's like, you can't make magic twice. And he did a great job with Pulp Fiction, but it's still Reservoir Dogs, still that story. You know, even that fan theory about Steven Buscemi in Pulp Fiction, how that's the character from Reservoir Dogs, and now he's a fucking maitre d' at a fucking, you know, restaurant where he has to play Buddy Holly every night. Like, that's his punishment for what happened in Reservoir Dogs.
I've never heard that.
But he didn't get away in Reservoir
really?
Dogs. It's been revealed in the time. I've never heard that theory. But he also didn't survive.
Yeah, there's theories that, like, he literally died, which is the most, like, common theory, which I believe. But there's also a fan theory that he's at the restaurant. He has to kind of live his life undercover as a waiter dressed up like Buddy Holly. And I was like, that's kind of a fun one, too. Because that's what the whole thing with the briefcase was. You know, Marcellus Wallace's briefcase, that was supposed to be the Reservoir Dogs cachet. You know, that was that other theory. That was what they were after. And that's why you never get to see it.
You do your boss's dirty laundry?
Or that it was Marcellus Wallace's soul that was in the briefcase.
That,
and he was like,
that's
devil.
The one that I
yeah.
heard because of the Band-Aids on the back of the neck.
Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be a 666 tattoo. On his neck, you know, but, you know, we'll be talking about Ving Rhames in a little bit, though, with the movie for tonight, but I love that whole scene, motherfucker, Bruce Willis is running over with the fucking car, you see Ving Rhames getting out of the car and he just shoots that woman in the thigh, she's like, oh my god, where'd the motherfucker go, love that whole scene, but, you know, but yeah, so we'll see what happens with Tarantino's final movie. But what else are we talking about tonight, D?
Are you afraid of the dark?
No.
Mid-90s Nickelodeon series that ran from 1991 to 1996, as well as the reboot that came along in 2019 is going to be expanding.
Mm-hmm.
With a series of books and graphic novels.
Okay.
You know, the first two book is available to order now. It's called Tale of Grandmother. It can be purchased now. And the first graphic novel is going to be called The Witch's Wings and Other Terrified Tales. That will come out October 3rd and is currently available for pre-order. So if you have been a fan traditionally of the Are You Afraid of the Dark series, going back to the 90s and, of course, just a few years ago, they're expanding upon that universe, pushing into the print world again with a series of books and graphic novels.
Hmm. All I can think about with that grandma is like in King Diamond.
Let me help you out of your chair, Grandma.
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 Grandma. Yeah, damn it, King Diamond. Interesting. Yeah, they're expanding to book form, which is always good. I always appreciate the printed word. But all right, what else are we talking about, Dean?
That appeared to be the final item on my agenda for this evening.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. Well, Mad Monkey, it is your film pick of the week, Piranha 3DG from 2012, directed by John Gulager. Give us a plot synopsis, what you thought about it, and let's kick off this slippery, wet discussion.
All right. This is the story of a unique breed of prehistoric carnivorous fish who was thought to be extinct ages ago. But oh no, baby, this little bad son of a bitch crawled their way out of extinction and swam their way back to the top of the food chain. These fish are nasty. These fish are tough. These fish are hungry. These fishes can fucking punch through steel. Hell yeah, they can. And they're heading to a water park near you. So let's see if the employees of the Big Wet can survive the carnage of Piranha 3DG. All right, yeah. So, as all of our fans know, looking at you, Mama, I'm usually not here in July, so I never, ever get to make the fun summer picks for horror movies. So I've been saving this pick for a fucking long, long time. I wanted something campy. I wanted something fun. Like, I wanted to give us boys a fun horror movie that, like, had the vibe of all those, like, late-night 80s TNA movies that we all love so much. You know, I wanted blood, I wanted gore, but I also wanted, like, bad jokes, cheesy makeout scenes, and lots and lots of bouncy boobs. I pretty much wanted Malibu Bikini Shop meets Critters. And you know what? This, in my opinion, this movie was exactly what I wanted it to be. This delivered everything to me, and I personally had a great time watching this movie. I just hope you guys had as much fun watching this as I did.
So, Piranha 3DD versus Piranha 3D, which one do you think is better? Because we covered the first one, and we're covering the sequel.
No, this, I told you, this is the only Piranha movie I've ever seen.
Well, then you guys have blacked out because we covered Piranha 3D on the show before, and you were there.
Maybe it was one of those. Maybe it was one of those summer seasons when the monkey wasn't around.
Yeah,
it's possible. I could have sworn you were, but all right. So anyway, so Piranha 3DD. So you liked it. All right. So Dean, what'd you think about Piranha 3DD?
Look, what can you say? I fucking love it. It's exactly what it is. Going back to my time as a young watcher of movies, the original Joe Dante Piranha was a favorite from a very young age, as well as Piranha 2, The Spawning. Loved both
James
of
Cameron.
Those, have seen them countless times. And when the first of the new Piranhas, Piranha just 3, simply 3D, came out. Like, that was a super exciting time. The Ghoul and I went and saw that in the theater together and had a blast. I did not get a chance to see Piranha 3DD in the theaters, but when I did finally get the chance to watch it, you know, just absolutely, like, it's just great. It's just so much fun. It's so fucking silly. And just so absurd, and it's funny, and it's just great. I'm a fan of the Piranha series, and have always been.
I'm glad you liked it. Yay! King, what did you think?
Well, I mean, to resound what the Dean said, exactly. Like, you know what you're getting into with a Piranha movie. Like, it's going to be silly, there's going to be tits, there's going to be weird kills. Like, you know what you're getting. It's not going to be a deep story where, like, wow, there's a lot of depth to these characters, and I want to find out what happens. Like, no, you just want to see the piranha kill people, and it delivers. You know, like you said, Monkey, you didn't remember seeing the movie when we talked about it. You probably weren't there, but I loved the first Piranha movie, the remake, when it came out, because it was so much fun, you know, having Eli Roth be a DJ that fucking gets killed. That's probably why you should watch it, Monkey. Because you get to see Eli Roth. So you might have a fun time with that. But it was just, you knew what you were getting into. I saw both of these in the theaters, and I saw both of them in 3D. So I was like, I love just campy fucking movies.
So these were actually in theaters in 3D?
In real D, yeah, in real 3D.
Yes.
You know, with the black
glasses. Oh, shit.
And stuff like that, so, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, sorry, King. Please continue, King.
I saw them both in real 3D, and it was just amazing. Like, you just get to see everything. The first one, a little bit funnier with the 3D.
Yeah, I only saw the first one. I only saw the first one in the real 3D.
I watched them both. As soon as the second one was announced, and I found out that John Goldberg directed it, he directed a movie called Feast that came out back in, like, the mid-aughts. I don't know if you guys remember that. It was part of the Project Greenlight TV show that was on AMC that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were behind. So they were trying to find, like, directors and actors and things like that, and they picked Feast to be that movie.
Yeah, I remember. I'd have to look it up. I'm not sure if I remember Feast, but I remember Project Greenlight for sure.
Yes, and John Gulager is the son of Clue Gulager, who we covered last week on the show with Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, and he does make an appearance in this one. So keeping it in the family, keeping it fun, keeping it campy. So, yeah, you know, that's why I made it a lot of fun. Seeing some returning characters like Ving Rhames, who returns. We'll talk about him at the end. But, you know, overall, it was just a fun experience. They did shit that you didn't think they were going to do. Piranhas flying up in the vaginas. It's like, you know what you're getting. Like, it's this, it's Piranha 3D. So, of course, guys, if you have anything you want to add during my narration, feel free to be like, I want to add something because, you know, it's fun. It's a pretty loose narration. So, as we kick off this movie, it's party time. Party on the lake. Woo! Oh, wait. The party's over because this is the first Piranha Massacre that we had from the last movie on Lake Victoria. That town has now become a ghost town since the previous Piranha Massacre. The area has since been quarantined and left abandoned. We cut to Cross Lake in Merkin County, Arizona. Did you guys get that Merkin comment?
Merkin.
As soon as I was like, Merkin, I was like, I fucking love it already. Pubic hair goatees. But so we cut to Cross Lake in Merkin County, Arizona. A fisherman is out at night with his buddy, the fisherman being Gary Busey and his buddy being Clue Gulager.
Yep.
The men wade through the lake and come across the
dead cow. Oh, that was okay.
Yes, Clue played the friend, you know. And just because I know Clue from so many movies, I was like, that's Clue. Because he has that distinct look with the glasses and his voice. I was like, it's definitely Clue. And he plays the character in Feast as well. But so they're going across the water. They find their way to a dead animal in the lake, which releases piranha eggs from its mouth and also its butthole. The men soon get attacked by the piranha and get torn to shreds. You know, and I love the farting noises from the animal as it gets released. Then we have to cut to the big wet water park run by Chet.
Woo!
His stepdaughter Maddie shows up, and she doesn't like how this water park is being run because Chet's like, it has to be more adult-oriented, including the adult pool area filled with huge, titty, naked women like Kiki the Russian. Maddie is half owner of the park, but Chet owns 51%, so his calls go. That night, Maddie's friends Shelby and Ashley show up with their boyfriends, Josh and Travis, to hang out with her. Maddie also reunites with Kyle, a former love interest and also a police officer in the town. Shelby then determines she has to lose her virginity, so she and Josh go off to go skinny dipping. And while the two play around in the water, a piranha enters Shelby's vagina. She feels this, and she decides, I have to go.
She's like, no, stop it. I don't like what you're doing. He's like 2 feet away. He's like, I'm not doing that fucking thing. What are you talking about?
I have to go. And she quickly leaves. So we cut to a park van where Ashley and Travis decide to have sex, but first they have to pray to God for forgiveness because they're not married. All right, you pray to God. Now you can fuck me. I love that fucking line. I fucking loved it. Now you can fuck me because we thank God for forgiveness.
And they've got, like, the whole shag wagon set up and shit like that. Everything is all, like, you know, this van is fucking done old school, you know, old school 80s style. You know, shag carpet inside, glitter ball and shit. It's even got some fucking old school cable in there. Yeah. I was loving it.
Okay, so Ashley handcuffs one of Travis's hands and accidentally releases the parking brake, so the van rolls into the water. The van begins to sink, and Ashley is unable to find the keys to the handcuffs. She soon escapes to the top of the van to call for help, but Travis is soon killed by a swarm piranha, leaving Ashley alone on the sinking van with no help in sight. Before I continue, there are two phone numbers that just popped up in our chat. So there's a 928, and there's also an 813. Is that either of you guys? Like last week when the ghoul called in, he's like, that's me.
No, that is not me, sir.
Okay, negative. Well, let's take a look here and see what we have going on. 813 caller, go ahead. What can we do for you talking to Tara this evening?
Hey, guys, I was a extra in this movie.
No way!
Hey!
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I was actually just scrolling through. It was filmed in a couple of different areas, but I was an extra, and part of it was filmed in Wilmington, North Carolina, and then the other part was filmed in Lake Havasu, Arizona. I didn't know if you were aware of that.
I was not.
All right, that's great. So how, you know, going back to the beginning, what led to your involvement? Was this your first time being an extra? Like, how did it all come about?
So I was actually working in the area, and I don't know if you know much about Wilmington, North Carolina. It's in a lot of movies. It was filmed, a lot of films were there. For example, some of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, it's got big rock cliffs. It almost looks like parts of Oregon, but it's on the East Coast. So I was working there at a local club. I was a bouncer, and they were looking for extras, people that wanted to be in bathing suits and that could run around and scream, guys and women. And they came in there, and they had some flyers. It didn't pay shit. I mean, it wasn't like we made a bunch of money. It was very, very minimal work. But I did get to meet Gary Busey. He was in the movie.
Yes, he was
in the opening sequence. What was it like meeting Gary Busey? Because, you know, obviously, you know, he is well known to be quite the character.
It's funny you should say that, actually, because he actually, we had one of the few small bars in the area, and he actually came to the bar with a couple of other people that were in the movie, some small-time actors. One was a real young guy. He couldn't have been more than 17, 18 years old at the time. And then there was a couple of other women in the movie that he hung around with. I think they all had the same agent. He was definitely very high-strung. And I remember the first thing that he said to us when he came into the bar, because I worked there, I got him a table, was he asked if we had any Coke, and which was crazy because he had just been in a really bad motorcycle accident years before, and I couldn't imagine a guy wanting to be any more high-strung. So we actually we had a dealer in the club. He came in, put out a big line, and then me and him partied all night. What was interesting is I went behind the bar and got some liquor, and we banged the shit out of that 18-year-old kid. I mean, I soaked up my cock and stuck it right in that fucking kid's ass. 18 years old, it was so tight, man, I couldn't tell you. But Busey was a good dude because when I was done sticking my cock in his ass, he licked it clean. I mean, you cannot beat a scenario like that. I mean, butt sex.
Yeah, that's quite the fascinating.
3D.
And this was,
Gary Busey's
this was
a good guy,
the
though.
Bar in front of all of the patrons in North Carolina?
No. Men's room.
So
and you know what the interesting
the
thing
liquor.
Is? Well, I asked Busey, I says, why, I mean, what's going on here? And he says, well, listen, you know, because I thought it was weird that the kid was Asian. If you look, he's still in the film. You could see the kid running around. And he said they have very little butthole asshole hair.
Interesting.
Huh. Well, I guess you learned with firsthand experience. During this time, was Gary Busey, was he wearing his dark-framed Buddy Holly glasses during all of this activity that took place in this bar in North Carolina?
Listen, I don't know why you're making a joke out of this. We had a good time. We were all in the movie, made about $90 a day. But Gary Busey's a good dude. He really is.
All right. That's a riveting story. Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Calling in and sharing your memories. And I hope when this movie airs on TV, which is kind of frequently, and you're scrolling the TV at night and you come upon it, I hope that you're brought right back to that time in your life and you're able to relive those precious memories of that experience that you had.
Hey, listen, it's hard to find a tight butthole 18-year-old Asian these days on the beach. So I definitely, you're 100% right. I have a different view of the movie. Hey, guys, God bless. I got to get going. I got a youth group to attend to. Thank you.
All right, so we also have 928 area code. You're on the Talking Terror.
Hello?
What's up?
Hello?
Hello. Yes, we're here. How's it going?
Good. I was just wondering, can I have that guy's number? I'd like him to ravage my asshole.
No, sorry. Anyway, so we're going to move on. Because we have
King.
Funny people.
For future reference, don't be so quick to dismiss. I can have great fun with that for a minute. I know we have a movie to talk about, but it's not often we get called.
Yeah, I would love that fun, but this is not the shock radio. Obviously, this is why I don't like taking calls.
taking calls. That was great fun. I could have gone on another five. I could have gone on another 10 minutes with that. So
I yeah no. No, it just went south real quick. Unfortunately, yeah, it's a lot of fun when we have people that like to joke around. Anyway, so
I asked him if Gary Busey was wearing his Buddy Holly glasses, and he gets all like, "Why are you trying to make light of this situation? I'm just trying to recount my memory."
I was talking about fucking 19-year-old Asian kid. Like, okay, well, sorry, sir. Continue. Oh boy. Anyway, so the next day, it's one day until opening of the Big Wet, so we cue to a ska-heavy montage of hot girls in bikinis having fun around the pool. We get introduced to Big Dave, who's having a little solo fun using one of the pool's water jets. Shelby shows up feeling a little weird and immediately vomits. Dave laughs at her and then jumps into the vomit pile like it's a rain puddle. Meanwhile, Kyle is on scene to see the van being pulled from the lake and discovers no one's inside. Kyle reassures Shelby and Maddie that Ashley and Travis might be around somewhere. So later, Maddie is sitting on a dock with Shelby trying to confront her when the piranha attack. Maddie and Shelby run, but Shelby is knocked into the water. Maddie helps her out of the water, but the dock soon begins to shatter and split apart so that Maddie and Shelby...
Yeah, man. Like, just, the dock is just flying all over the place. It's like, so now we're getting to see the actual strength of these piranha.
And eventually, yeah, they both get knocked into the water, but they manage to make it to land. A piranha jumps out of the water, and Shelby has to kill it with a rock. Barry shows up and sees a dead piranha, having no idea what it is, but then he's like, "Is that a fucking piranha?" So we then cut to a video of Mr. Goodman from the first movie, played by Christopher Lloyd, and he's talking about the deadly fish. Later, Kyle drives with Maddie and Barry. So later, Kyle drives with Maddie and Barry to Mr. Goodman's house, where he explains that the piranhas can become terrain viable, able to live on land and sea due to migrating through underground tunnels. So that night, Maddie decides she wants to check out the underground tunnels near the park, but she needs a spotter. Barry can't help her because he can't swim. And she's like, "Oh, if I had known you can't swim, I would have taught you." And he's like, "Yeah, but, you know, whatever." So
Barry
decides to go on
Barry can't swim. Barry can't swim.
Yeah. And she even says, like, "You work at a water park. Like, how have you never learned how to swim?" He's like, "I don't know." Like, you would think you could be in the kiddie pool. It's like 2 feet deep. You know, go in there. You know, swim around a little bit. You know, bang some Asian kid that guy did with a bunch of coke.
Oh, shit.
So she grabs a flashlight and goes out on her own. Piranhas appear, begin to chase her, but she's rescued by Kyle. And before they can do any damage, and he lays her down on the ground and gives her a little kiss. So, of course, Barry's like, "Well, this fucking guy." Like, "Well, yeah, dude. You're fucking like you. Swim." Like, like, there's no way you're getting this. Later, Shelby is comforted by Josh, and then she says, "Make love to me. I don't want to die a virgin."
Oh,
so he's like, "Fucking hell, fucking yeah, dude. Like, let's fucking go."
And, man, yeah, her looking all fine and shit like that. And for the long, like, the entire time I was watching this, because I had no idea how old it was, I was thinking it was the chick from the Brady Bunch movies. And then I think, then I realized it was way too late for that. But, yeah. Yeah, here we go. It's like, damn.
Yeah, he's, like, feeling it. And she's like, "I'm loving this." But,
yeah,
halfway through his stroke, all of a sudden he's like, "What the fuck? What the fuck?" And he pulls his dick out, and there's a piranha clamped down on his dick. Shelby is convulsing. She's going into seizures. She's foaming at the mouth. "What the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck?" And he's fucking running around this fucking house with a piranha hanging off his fucking dinger. "What the fuck do I got to do?" So he grabs the fucking kitchen knife and decides the only thing he can do is to cut his own tip of the dick off.
Hell no. No, I will, like, figure out... Nope. I would, like, find some way to get that fucker off. No. Nah, I am not doing that. But still, though. Funny as shit, though.
You could just stab it through the midsection. Like, just stab it right through the midsection and then pull it off as it dies. You don't have to chop the fucking tip of your dick off, dude. Like, there's better ways to go about this. But in the moment, too, like, what are you thinking? Like, I have a piranha clamped down on my dick. Like, you know.
Nope.
I'm running around. I don't know what to do. So... he runs around and eventually, like you said, cuts the tip of his dick off. that's his first reaction. So, of course, Shelby wakes up and she's like, oh, I'm so much better now. Where's Josh? Where's he at? So she's been walking around the room, seeing blood everywhere. And then she steps on the piranha that he cut off and it spits out the tip of his dick. And she's like, that's weird, but I'm going to keep looking for Josh.
And then it just pops out. But here we, you know, here we get to actually see dick there on the screen. There it is. But just
the tip of his dick.
Just the tip.
Laying on the ground.
Little game we play called just the tip.
But you would think that Josh would be laying on the ground. He'd be holding his fucking chopped off dick. You know, she'd be like, oh my God, no. She goes to the window to look outside, and he pops up from behind her with a knife. What the fuck did you do? I'm like, wow, that's a great reaction. Like, after you just cut the tip of your dick off, you're not even passed out. All that adrenaline, man. You didn't even get the cum. So, like, imagine if that
maybe
fucking, you know, the tip of that dick, you shot out the pre-cum.
Or maybe the piranha got it. Who knows?
It swallows. You know they swallow. All piranhas swallow. Don't have to worry about that. So later that night, we see Chet is pulled over by Kyle, and it's revealed that Kyle has been accepting bribes from Chet. He's been allowing water pumped from underground river into the park, and Chet is happy that Kyle has everything in order and then tells him that he needs to keep Maddie in the dark about his plans too. And I love the fact that Kyle still gives him a speeding ticket. He's like, just doing my job. Fuck you. Throws the ticket away. You know, so we cut back to home. Shelby, covered in blood, tells Maddie that something came out of her vagina and attacked Josh, and they have to go to the hospital. Something came out of her vagina and attacked Josh. So that would sober me up so fucking quick. Like, imagine coming home to a place where you live with your roommates, and all of a sudden your roommate's covered in blood going, my fucking vagina attacked Josh. I'd be like, what? Like, can we just take a second to kind of, like, go back. Like, what do you mean? I mean, I'm sure your vagina attacked Kyle. You guys had sex. No, something came out. Like, oh, okay. Let's go to the hospital, I guess. I don't know. And we never see Josh again, which I fucking love. We never see that guy again. He's done after this.
Yeah,
we never see him pop up.
He's earned his bit. He doesn't need to try and come back at the end of the day and try and save anyone. No, he needs to recover. All stumpy over there.
Yeah, but you think I would love if they had like a scene with him coming back with like a cast on his dick and like get a little blood spotting on his face. I don't want to talk about it.
Maybe he's gonna come back in Piranha 3DDD with a steel dick.
Oh, just whips out the
maybe
shorts.
So.
Like, you can't get me, Piranha. This has a steel fucking dick. It'd be great. Like, where is that fucking sequel? That needs to be made. So the Big Wet is set to open, but they need a big special guest. Somebody that's going to come there and really fucking give this place gravitas. So who do you get? David motherfucking Hasselhoff. Previous Sharknado episode. And he's here talking about the fish hunter.
For some waterslide protection.
Right? You know, this guy writing the Fish Hunter theme song while lying in bed with two fucking hot chicks and like, am I going to be in the song? Like, hell yeah. Like, I fucking love the Hoff in this movie. He knows what he's doing. He's hanging out in bed with these two chicks, writing the Fish Hunter theme song. He's like, I know I got to go to the fucking park later.
I'm not Trissy. The other one pops up. I'm Trissy. Okay, whatever, Maddie. No, I'm Maddie. Shit like that.
Whatever. And I love that the jacket they give him in the movie has Hoff Watch on the patch rather than Baywatch. It's Hoff Watch. And I was like, oh, they know what they're doing, and I fucking love them for doing this. So the Big Wet opens with Hasselhoff as the guest, the celebrity guest. But among the other guests are Deputy Fallon and former cameraman Andrew Cunningham from the other movie. So Bing Rames playing Deputy Fallon, coming back with the cameraman, Andrew Cunningham. They're coming to the park to see it get open, and I fucking love fucking Bing Rames in this scene. When they first pop up in the park and he doesn't want to go in the water, he's like, Put me in the fucking water. Put me in the water. He says, I don't want to go in the water. Well, do you want to? I don't want to go in the water. He's like, put me in. And the woman's like, what are you doing? Hey. Going in that guy. And he's like, I'm sorry.
Don't you push that handicapped man into the water? What, he wants to go into the water. No, I don't. I'm scared of this. No, I'm a pussy. I'm scared of this water.
You tell him, go push me in the water. Panicked, he gets, clutching on his shirt. And he's like, well, I don't know what to do right now. And he's like, push me in the water. This whole pack and
push my bitch ass, push my bitch ass into the water.
But Fallon is afraid of the water because he lost his legs to the piranhas in the previous movie. So Fallon's there to hopefully get over his fear of the water, but of course doesn't really work out because he's fucking terrified. Maddie gets back to the park and attempts to shut the park down, but is stopped by Chet and Kyle. And that's when we see that Chet has been pumping in water from the underground tunnels, and he's like, it's free water. I don't got to pay utilities or anything. He's like, it's not cool, though, because there's things in the water that you don't change. He's like, I don't give a fuck. Yeah, I'm not paying utilities on this bitch. I got
fuck
big
city
women if you go in the water. So we then eventually see that the piranhas have made their way into the area through the pipes and attacked, killing many of the guests. And that's when Fallon's like, motherfucker, and he fucking pulls out his shotgun prosthesis in his legs. You ain't gonna get me,
shotgun legs!
Oh, my God. Him just fucking firing off these fucking rounds at these piranhas as they're flying away. And you have the cameraman behind him going, oh, my shit. This round after round blowing away these piranhas as people are panicking and running for fucking safety.
How'd you afford a shotgun leg with all the money I didn't spend on socks?
So, yeah, he uses a shotgun leg prosthesis to fight the piranhas off. And what I didn't mention a few minutes ago is that David Hasselhoff at this water park, he's the lifeguard. Like, they just put him in a fucking chair and, like, just sit there, man. Like, just sit there with your sunglasses on and you're fucking David Hasselhoff. So a little boy named David, he gets bit by a piranha, and he's like, ah, I fucking got bit by one of those. And the mom's like, I don't believe you, but go find a lifeguard, get him a Band-Aid. So he goes to David Hasselhoff, and he's like, can I have a Band-Aid? And he's like, you don't know who I am? He's like, no. Baywatch? And he's like, I don't know what that is. Knight Rider? No. He's like, you're a lifeguard. Can I get a Band-Aid? He's like, what? David, you're my main man, David. You're my main man. Get this guy a Band-Aid, my main man, David. He doesn't know who the fuck I am. He doesn't want an autograph. He doesn't want fucking anything, man. So when the piranhas start attacking the park, we see that young David is once again in the fucking water, and Hasselhoff is like, this fucking kid's in the water again. This fucking kid got out of the water. I can't save him. Like, no, no. And we have a woman coming up to him, and she's like, you got to do something. He's like, I don't, though. Like, I'm just here to fucking hang out. You know, I'm going to sit here. And then he keeps looking back at young David, and he just, those shots back and forth of him looking at David. And he's like.
And then, and then every time it's a Raimi cam shot on Hasselhoff.
And you don't think he's going to do anything. You think he's just going to stay up in that fucking seat. But then he's like, I've got to save him. So we cut to the Baywatch fucking theme song as he grabs fucking tools and starts running towards young David, jumping over people. Then he stops. He's like, oh, fuck, I'm old. I'm in a yard.
I love that so much. That sequence is just so fucking hilarious, and it's like peak absurdity, you know. At the top of the discussion of the show, when I talked about, you know, thoroughly enjoying the first Piranha 3D, and then this one, like they're so different, but still so much the same. And this whole sequence with Hasselhoff is just so brilliant in its absurdity, and I love it so much.
It's just so wonderful to hear that Baywatch theme hit as he picks up his life-saving device and runs to get young David. you know, and just saying he's old and he has to jump back in and save young David. And young David's like, thank you. I got you. You know, and bringing him out of the pool. Everybody's fucking getting attacked. And then you cut back to Chet, who's like, I need to get the fuck out of here, man. Like, this is not a good scene, man. Everybody's dying. There's a lot of lawsuits coming my way. People are going to be upset. So I just need to grab the cash box and fucking leave out of this place. So, of course, he grabs the cash box, and then he sees a young girl with her mother being chewed up by the piranha, and she's looking up at him with that fucking hate. Like, I fucking hate you, motherfucker. He's like, here's some money. Here's maybe. It's not my fault.
He just throws money on the mom's dead body. And he's like, it's not my fault. And he throws some more money on her.
On the dead body. And then she picks up, like, single. She picks up a single dollar bill, and she's, like, looking at it in the fucking sun. I'm like, oh, I'm going to make sure it's legit. And then he backs over the body. He's trying to leave. Ow! Sorry. I just love the fact that he backed over the girl and her mom. After he threw money on the body, he's like, well, I need to get the fuck out of here. So, of course, he steps on the gas, but then there's some low-hanging flags that cut his fucking head off. And, of course, you have to get the slow-motion shot of his head coming off, and then the big titty woman going, oh, my God, and then just fucking motorboating that fucking shit.
With their bloody titties all over his face and stuff like that. You know, yeah. I'm hoping, like, you know, for his sake, they didn't actually use a prop head or anything like for that. You know, hopefully he got to just enjoy that scene. I'm hoping that he got to enjoy that scene.
Yeah, it would have been great if he could be in that moment. I was expecting the fucking head to have the tongue out, like, you know, just right in between the fucking tits. It didn't quite happen. But so Maddie tells Barry to begin draining the pools, while she attempts to save those that are still in the water. However, while she's rescuing people, she becomes caught in the suction and is dragged down to the bottom of the pool. So, of course, she's, like, fucking flailing for life. Kyle, help me! Kyle, please! And he's like, I want to, but this piranha's in there, and I'm a scared boy. I have to go. There's no saving you. And she's like, fuck you! She runs away as she gets sucked down. And, of course, Barry shows up, and he's like, fuck, I want to have sex with her, and I like her, but I don't know how to swim. And he's like, all right, I'm gonna fucking do it. I'm going to fucking go in the water. I'm going to swim down and save her because I fucking like this chick. He gets into the pool, and he's like, nope, can't do it.
Immediately like, fuck
swims
that.
Back. Like, bad decision. Bad decision. You know, as he gets to the surface, as the piranhas that keep attacking the water and everybody inside. So once Kyle refuses, he runs away. But eventually, Barry, despite unable to swim, leaps down and brings her to the surface using one of the tridents. Maddie is eventually revived. Thankful for saving her, they share a kiss. And he's like, I've always had a crush on you. And she's like, aw, but friends, right? And then you just see Barry casually kicking the water.
Cock blocking the knife. Really?
But that's when you have the scene of Barry just casually kicking her back into the water. Whoops. Sorry. You know, and in the interim, we have Big Dave, the one employee who had a fucking piranha stuck up his ass, which has to be pulled out by Barry. He's like, it's in my ass. It's in my ass. Get it out. And he's like, it's going to hurt. He's like, I don't care. You just see his big old ass covered in fucking blood. You know, got it out. All right. What do we got to do? We got to get to these fucking pipes, man. So Big Dave pours chlorine into the pipes, followed by lighting up a joint. The resulting explosion kills most of the piranhas. Kyle, running away because he's a pussy, eventually looks up towards the sky, and he gets a fucking trident to the eye. And Barry and Maddie are like, ew, but cool. He was a
sweet.
I just love
that
effect.
But for some reason, in this world, chlorine is highly flammable.
Well, I the magic of the movies, monkey. Magic of the movies.
No.
Yes,
chlorine
exactly.
Is flammable? I always thought so.
Yeah. It's not.
Well, I learned something today. Thank you, Mr. Wizard.
You're welcome. And that's
I thought it always
on.
Was. So.
Shooting star.
The more you know. I always thought it was flammable. But, yeah, of course, Kyle gets his due service by getting the trident, which, again, it's a plastic fucking trident. It's not like it's made of steel or metal. It's a plastic fucking toy. So I was like, how does it do that
no,
much damage? But
but the metal because the metal prong is snipped off and they have a metal spike in there for picking up trash. They showed that at the beginning of the movie.
Did they? See, I missed that. Because I always thought it was
yeah.
like a plastic fucking trident. Like, I was like, it's a plastic toy.
No.
Because I know that Barry killed the piranha that was trying to kill Maddie with the trident. But I was like, ah, it's plastic.
Yeah.
Like, it could kill a fucking piranha, obviously. But
that's why. Because at the beginning of the movie, like, when he's going around in the shark outfit and all that kind of stuff, picking up trash, yeah, it has a metal spike on it.
Hmm. Okay. Well, like I said, it's a missed detail. Because I was like, that's plastic. How's that going to kill anybody? But when he got it to the eye, I was like, okay. Well, I guess velocity. Again, Mr. Wizard, I don't know. Velocity, you know, times the person standing in place. Maybe. You know.
Velocity versus speed times mass.
Yeah. Obviously, I didn't know. After all that happens, the celebrations are cut short. Because Maddie receives a call from Mr. Goodman, who informs them that the piranha left with him, they're starting to evolve. And after escaping its tank, it's now able to move on land. And Maddie's like,
"Oh
yeah,
shit.
I know." She tells him, "I know though." So of course, we cut back to everybody being like, "All right, it's over. The piranhas are dead. We can kind of take a breath." And little David, David Hasselhoff's big buddy, decides to go over to a piranha, and he's like, "Everything's fine. Like it's gonna be okay." But that piranha jumps up and cuts off little David's head. Fucking loved it. I was like, "Yes, they fucking went
it's
there.
It's great.
They killed a fucking child. His head is fucking cut the fuck off, falls to the ground,
and
everybody
yeah.
starts taking out their cameras and fucking taking photos of it."
And David Hasselhoff is like, "Stupid fucking ginger."
And on,
it
you
was
know,
just, it was
on
so
top
great.
Of that, what makes it so great is, you know, how much time was spent on, like, that kid and David Hasselhoff,
oh, yeah.
like, saving him and, like, to then, like, move ahead a little bit in the action and have this happen. It's just so great. You know, it wasn't just, like, random kid, like, the kid had a his character had like a relationship with David Hasselhoff, and the experience that they shared together that they go down this road. It's just so fucking wonderful.
It would be great if fucking Hasselhoff showed up and said,
"No,
David,
the
no!
complete story arc."
And Hasselhoff just cradling the fucking decapitated kid's head like body. "David, no. Why'd you have to do it, David? You're my man. You're my main man."
Not my main man, David. No.
No. Like, just have that fucking moment, like a dramatic moment in this fucking hilarious fucking horror movie. He's just cradling the body. Because Fallon and Cunningham, they never show back up. Like, they have that scene at the pool where he's shooting them with the shotgun prosthesis, but they never show back up again. I was like, I would love if they showed back up again. I'm like, motherfuckers are dead. You know? Like, but they just kind of disappear. Like, they're just forgotten about after that one scene. Like, they never have a moment where they're like, "Yep, that's why I don't get in the motherfucking water." You got to have another moment with that.
Fuck that motherfucking water.
Yep. Just so underused, man. Like, I just wanted to see more of Ving Rhames. Like, just to have one last scene with him being like, "Yeah, fuck these piranhas." You know, but we don't get it. It's just done. But when the movie's completed and we get to the end credits, we also see David Hasselhoff finally making a music video for Fish Hunter. So he has his theme song complete, and he's running on the beach, and he has
with
the Fish Hunter theme song. Yep.
So with the trident.
But speaking with that, because we got a little bit of time, so I could bring it up. Have you guys ever seen Baywatch Nights, the spinoff of Baywatch?
Negative.
No, never.
I have
never
not.
Heard of it.
Guys, if you
I've
haven't,
heard of it. I
see
haven't
if you can find it. Yeah, see if you can find it on YouTube. It's fucking glorious because you have Baywatch. You know, it's all about people saving lives on the beach, and of course, David Hasselhoff, Pamela Anderson, all these characters. They did a spinoff on UPN called Baywatch Nights, which started off as like, hey, you know, we save lives by night. We solve some crimes and save lives by day, solve crimes by night. But then they made it into a supernatural show where it was ghosts haunting the beach.
What?
And there was aliens involved.
Yeah.
There was ghosts involved. And, yeah, it was
nope,
all about David Hasselhoff's character in Baywatch. Oh, it's fucking glorious.
Yeah, you know, have seen, you know, plenty of episodes of the original Baywatch series. And, you know, I remember when there was something called Baywatch Nights, but I haven't seen
mm-hmm.
1 minute of it and just assumed it was, you know, Baywatch, like, surrounding nightlife. I had no idea there was, like, a supernatural element to that. I've never heard of such a thing.
And it didn't start out that way. Like, it originally started, like I said, like, during the day, Mitch, you know, David Hasselhoff's character, like, he saves lives on the beach, but then at night he helps police solve murders. And then all of a sudden, in the next season, they're like, yeah, but what if we brought ghosts into this and make it supernatural? Like, what if we brought aliens in this? So it's like X-Files meets Beachwatch, Baywatch, and it's fucking amazing.
Oh, jeez.
So incredibly good but bad at the same time, because it's just, it's like I thought they just wanted to save lives on the beach, but no, apparently it's there's an alien infestation and they have to go against the government in Miami.
And apparently they never have to sleep either, because if they stay up all night chasing ghosts too.
It's all that cocaine, man. You know that David Hasselhoff sitting on those rails. I don't ever have to sleep again. I discovered the cocaine. Like, It was the 90s.
King,
a lot of weird.
Do you by chance know who, like, when Baywatch Nights turned into a supernatural series? Do you by chance know like who wrote that? Was that like Hasselhoff wanted creative control and he took it on? Like how did, do you know anything about how that came to pass?
He did have a lot of control. I know that he had a lot of creative control, but he didn't direct the episodes. He didn't write a lot of the episodes, but he did have a lot of say because they started in, like, the early 2000s, like mid-2000s. They started with being, like, a crime show where it was, like, there's murders happening on the beach, and at night we have to solve them. And then they decided in the second and third seasons, like, let's make this kind of supernatural. Like, let's make this, like, a Kolchak type of thing, where there's ghosts and weird shit happening on the beach and we have to fucking figure it out. So, yeah, it was a quick turn where they kind of were competing with X-Files at the time. They were competing and they wanted to do something similar. And, yeah, I know some of the episodes are available on YouTube. But, yeah, like Baywatch Nights, it became its own thing. Didn't last long, but because they were just competing, man. Like a lot of those shows at the end were, you know, with X-Files. Yeah, you know, they were Silk Stockings, you know, trying to make the sexy murders, but then also supernatural.
Now, King, I also wanted to ask you two guys, okay, because, again, this is the only Piranha movie I have ever seen. Okay, Piranha
yeah.
3D, all right, you guys, is that one more serious, like more horror, or is this something throughout all of the Piranha movies where they're all actually kind of silly in their storytelling?
Comedy.
I'll take the first part of that. The first of these,
go ahead. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Piranha movies, Piranha 3D, you know, like funny and campy, and Jerry O'Connell, Girls Gone Wild type videographer, you know,
mm-hmm.
who's on the scene of like the lake to like make his sexy videos amongst all of the revelry and partying. So it's not I don't think it's as campy and ridiculous as 3DD, but it is definitely much more in the campy direction. If you go back to the 70s and the original Piranha film, like looking at it now, it's campy, but when it came out, like that was more in the direction of horror, you know, when that came out compared to the 3D and 3DD.
Oh, okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, Piranha 3D, when it came out, it was comedy. Not as much as 3DD. Like, 3DD, they're like, let's just fucking throw everything at the fucking window, man. Like, let's just make this as funny as we can, make it gory, make it fun.
Yeah.
You know, Piranha 3D had a lot of funny moments, but it was more horror. Yeah. Hmm?
It was more horror and, you know, it was... I don't mean that it's a serious movie, but like it's more of
right.
a, like a real movie compared to 3DD.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's got more story. It's got a little bit more depth. A lot of the characters have a little bit more to say. But again, you know, you get to the beach scene, and you have Eli Roth as a DJ spraying girls' tits, going, "Let me see those Danny DeVitos." And I was like, ever since then, I was like calling tits Danny DeVitos. I was like, I love it. But
Danny
even going back, Danny DeVito's, like, yeah, so, but even going back to, like, the Dean had said about Piranha, directed by Joe Dante back in the 70s, and then the sequel, directed by James fucking Cameron, The Spawning, like, they were just exploitation movies. Like, yeah, they were funny, but they wanted to focus on the horror. They wanted to focus on the gore. So the comedy was there, but they were like, you know, we want to focus on the gore. But both of those movies are a lot of fun, especially seeing James Cameron in an early age directing a movie. You know, The Spawning of all movies. He gets a sequel to Piranha. So it's a fun movie. So you should definitely check them all out, Mucky. You know, the original Piranha, Piranha 2, and then Piranha 3D.
Thanks.
I'm not positive. I would have, and I'm not looking it up right now. I'm just going on memory. I'm pretty sure for Piranha 2, The Spawning, James Cameron is still credited as director, but there was something weird. Like he either like removed during filming or he took over during filming. Like there was something bizarre. Like it's not just Piranha 2, The Spawning directed by James Cameron. He's credited, but there's, I think someone else is credited also. I don't remember exactly what the specifics of, but there was something weird about it.
Yeah. He was brought in. Like he was a journeyman in that movie. Like, they brought him in to direct that movie. There was an original director. I can't remember the name at the moment. But, yeah, he was brought in because they didn't like what the original director was doing. So they wanted to bring him in to see what he can do and make this movie. So he was brought in as a journeyman. It wasn't his project. He didn't write it. He didn't really have any input. They just kind of put him in the director's chair and said, you know, let's see what you can do. But that's my recollection of Piranha 2. He was just kind of brought in to kind of do something that the original director didn't do, which happens, you know, from time to time. You see that, you know.
It happens all the time.
It does,
but
you
then
know.
But then probably once James Cameron started getting bigger later, they reprinted all the VHS tapes to say James Cameron's Piranha 2.
And it's interesting to bring that up, Monkey, because Titanic was a big thing that brought that Piranha 2, The Spawning, to the surface, where a lot of DVDs were being printed back then when Titanic came out. Because they're like, oh, you love Titanic? You love this fucking big motion picture movie? Well, check out his original movie that he did back in the day, Piranha 2, The Spawning. So a lot of DVDs were printed back then. Because they, you know, a lot of these production companies were like, let's fucking, you know, capitalize, man. Like, he just released one of the biggest movies of the decade, like, you know, Titanic, you know, so let's release his first, you know, quote-unquote movie, the, you know, Piranha 2. So that's how it got a lot of exposure. I know a lot of people back then when I saw Titanic were talking about James Cameron. I'm like, oh, did you hear about this movie, Piranha 2, like The Spawning? I'm like, yeah, I know about that movie. Like, you know, what a fucking weird movie for him to direct. He's always been about the water, you know, and it's true. He was always about the water, you know, waiting for, you know, him to do the, you know, documentary about the Ocean Gate. I'm sure he'll release something. Hi, you know, I've been down to Titanic numerous times. I'm in a documentary about Ocean Gate, so I'll have to see if he does one. I'm sure he has some ideas. But then again, he's wrapped up in Avatar, because I heard that I think the next one's going to be in 2025. So,
yeah, but again, like you were saying, water. And what was the second one? All water. He's empty.
Oh, yeah. Hey, man, if you can make that money, make it, you know. You know, I have no problem with that. Guy's making big money. He started off small, making big money now. Like, even Kathryn Bigelow, you know, doing Near Dark and then doing The Hurt Locker, winning an Oscar for it. I remember when she was doing horror movies. It's a weird thing when you see directors kind of make it big, you know, and get accolades that they deserve, but starting off small in the horror genre, you know, you always appreciate it. But as we close out, of course, the ghoul was not here tonight to talk about Piranha 3DD, but he'll be back next week. This is Film Pick of the Week. And we're going to be talking about Killing Ground, that came out in 2017, directed by Damien Power. So I have no notes. he gave us an original pick. Notes? You have notes?
I know nothing of this film either. But yes, mm-hmm. That is what we'll be watching next week, according to the ghoul. So yes,
we'll
Killing Ground is located for view. Yeah, if you guys are not aware, it is located on Tubi.
Great.
It's on Tubi. Yep. It is available to watch on Tubi. So Killing Ground from 2017.
King, you can find it online elsewhere. You can find it online elsewhere. I've got it.
I already have. Yeah, I already did. I did it earlier when he said that was a movie.
Okay,
I'm already good. But yeah, no, he and it's one of those funny things because he had picked a movie that the Dean had picked, and I was like, we did that. So I'm going to try to send the...
And it was a good pick, but we already covered it.
The Summer Camp Nightmare. That was the ghoul's original pick, and I was like, the Dean picked that. Summer Camp Nightmare.
Yeah, I know.
That was your pick.
Did you say that the...
Yeah.
Yes, it was my pick, but I know it was my pick. I got a little cut off. Did you say that the ghoul tried to make that his pick? And you got to tell him I already did it?
Yep. Yeah.
I guess he didn't remember.
I had to cut him off. I was like, Dean picked that, man. We covered it. It was a good movie. Oh, fuck. All right. You know, I'll be back. You know. So I told the ghoul that I will send him a full kind of email about all the movies that we picked from 2017 to now so he can never make another mistake. Because I was like, dude, we can't cover another movie like that. We did it. So
yeah.
He's like, all right.
I guess.
But let's.
I guess the ghoul couldn't remember Dean's big beef bologna.
Yes. Fear the record. Fear the record.
I fucking love the movie.
Don't forget there was a time when I announced my pick, and it was a pick that we had already covered. That was previously one of. Trivia question of the night. Does anybody remember the title?
Nope.
No.
It was Microwave Massacre.
Right. Microwave fucking Massacre, man. Yeah, that was the other one. It was done. So I will,
yeah, because
I had
picked that.
That's right.
No,
did.
I
that was your pick.
I'm pretty sure it was my and then I like announced it again like months later. Was it your pick, Monkey? I could have sworn Microwave Massacre was my pick.
It was the Monkey's pick, yeah. It was definitely the Monkey's pick.
Oh, all right then.
Yeah, and then it got re-announced, and I'm like, wait a second, we did that one. So it happens every now and then. We get mud brain when it comes to these movies, but I promise the ghoul I'll send him a full list of the episodes that we've covered from 2017. I will send it to you, ghoul. I'll send it to the Monkey. I'll send it to the Dean. So I'm like the gatekeeper of these fucking movies. I'm like, we covered that, man. I remember
we covered it already.
Yep. All right, Zool, the fucking gatekeeper. Yeah, I am the gatekeeper when it comes to movies. I'm like, we already did it. Pick another one. That's why I struggle, because I'm like, did we cover that? Fuck, we did. All right, moving on. And anyway, Monkey, thank you so much for picking tonight's movie pick of the week, Piranha 3DD. And we'll see you back here next week for the Ghouls pick.
Yeah, and thanks for listening, Fright fans. I'm glad we had a great time covering this with my Fright family. And I hope all of you at home got the big wet as we came in your ears. Good night, everybody. Mwah.
I mean, we had a guy talking about sucking Gary Busey's dick.
Jeez.
At a certain point.
Oh.
I mean,
yeah,
we had that.
Yeah.
And then
it
a female
happened.
Saying, I want his number. I honestly hate it.
That wasn't a female. That was no female, man. That was a guy talking like a girl.
That was a guy.
You think so? I don't know.
That was a guy.
I
100%, man. 100%.
I don't know. I just, I hate it, man. Like, I want to have fun on the show. I want to bring callers in, but this is why I don't bring callers in. Because I'm like, I sucked that guy's dick. I'm like, no, stop it. it's fine.
But it was in a bar bathroom on the set of Piranha 2. It was timely and topical, man.
If that ever happened, like, I believe that fucking guy. I'm like, oh, my God, he was an extra. But nope. Then I fucked an Asian guy with a tight asshole. I'm like, nope, he's gone. This guy's not real. God damn it. I wanted him to be fucking real.
Well, anyway, all you crazy motherfuckers out there, you keep up with the calls. The king might not like it, but I'm happy to talk to you anytime.
I have the power of veto, so I can shut him up real quick. So if you start talking about cocaine on dicks and shit like that, I'm going to cut you off. So be real, be fun, but at the same time, let's keep it fun. Anyway, all right, Dean, thank you so much for playing host tonight. Next week we'll be back, so you could just hang back and be a guest, which I'm looking forward to.
Return to my guestly ways. I think I'll manage, though.
And as always, I'm your old pal, the King RNGG. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Piranha 3DD. We'll catch you back here next week for the Ghouls Film Pick of the Week. As always, hail Satan, hail yourselves, hail Odorous. Keep watching horror movies. Keep America strong. I'll see you back here next week.